Today it's our great pleasure to have Mercedes Martín Benito as our speaker. She's affiliated with the Universidad Complutense de Madrid, and today she will talk about states of low energy in the loop quantum cosmology. So, Mercedes, you can start whenever you are ready.
Okay. So, hello everybody. First of all, I would like to thank Alessia for organizing these seminars and for inviting me to speak today. And thank you everybody for attending the seminar. Okay, so in this talk I will tell you what states of low energy are and the results of a preliminary study of employing them in loop quantum cosmology. All right, so you can hear me well, okay, right?
Yes.
Okay. So as probably you know, we call loop quantum cosmology the application of techniques of loop quantum gravity to cosmological models. So it's a canonical quantization of cosmological models. And typically we consider just isotropic and homogeneous cosmologies, Friedmann, Lemaître, Rose and Walker models. And in this talk, I will consider them coupled to an inflaton field, all right? The model that is analytically solvable is a massless scalar field coupled to the geometry, and the most important result that we get from loop quantum cosmology is, as probably you know, the singularity resolution, in the sense that the quantum dynamics of this model does not display any singularity, and where the classical singularity is, the Big Bang singularity, we get instead a quantum bounce, in the sense that the volume, the expectation value of the volume never goes to zero in this quantum cosmology. It suffers a bounce. Here I show the expectation value of the volume, of the spatial volume of the universe as a function of the massless scalar field. So while classically the volume would decrease till reaching zero for a classical solution, and also we would have the time reversal, expanding universe from zero volume. In the case of loop quantum cosmology, we get a bounce linking to classical branches of our universe that first contracts and then expands. Also, we get that the energy density of this scalar field never diverges, but it reaches a maximum bound that I will call rho c. Okay, this is a critical value for the energy density, and it depends on parameters of the quantization in loop quantum cosmology. Okay, so from this quantum dynamics, we can obtain a classical effective dynamics governed by this Friedmann equation that is modified with respect to the classical one. While classically we just get that the Hubble parameter to the square is equal to this constant times the energy density of our matter field, in loop quantum cosmology, the expectation value of the volume or of the scale factor in semi-classical states verifies this dynamical equation with this correction here, rho over the critical value in loop quantum cosmology. So that when the energy density is way lower than this critical value, we recover the classical dynamics of GR. But when the energy density reaches this critical value, the Hubble parameter vanishes, and then we get this bounds, the loop quantum cosmology bounds. This critical value of the energy density, also I would like you to know that it's of Planck order, okay? It's more or less Planck energy density. All right, so on top of this classical geometry that verifies this effective dynamics, now we are going to explore the dynamics of cosmological perturbations. You know that cosmological perturbations is the paradigm that we use to explain the large scale structure of our universe. And we have a connection between the theoretical predictions of our models and observations via the cosmic microwave background. No, we have, well, I am going to consider the paradigm of inflation. So Friedman, Robertson, Walker with an inflaton field. And on top of that background, we will consider the dynamics of cosmological perturbations. In the standard model, I mean by standard model, I mean the within GR, we typically set initial conditions at the onset of inflation. Okay, GR breaks down right before inflation begins, and then there is no pre-inflationary dynamics. So when we study cosmological models within GR, we don't ask ourselves what happened before inflation. We set the initial conditions of our cosmological perturbations at the onset of inflation. We choose their vacuum state, and typically, since during inflation the dynamics is very close to the sitter, we have a privileged choice of initial conditions for them, the Banch-Davis vacuum, all right? Or in other words, when within the standard model, the scales that we observe today, it's very reasonable to think that they reach the onset of inflation just in the vacuum state, in the natural vacuum state there, that is the Banch-Davis vacuum. And then, as you probably all know, during inflation, the modes freeze once they cross out the horizon. They cross out during inflation because during inflation, the comoving Hubble radius was decreasing. By the way, I am plotting here the inverse of the comoving Hubble radius. So since the comoving Hubble radius was decreasing, sun scales leave the horizon, cross out, they freeze, and then afterwards, they re-enter the horizon. And those are the scales that we are seeing today. So what we see today, the CMB, what we detect, is generated at the very early universe. In the sense that the quantum fluctuations of primordial perturbations induce a temperature and polarization and anisotropies in the CMB. Okay, so this is the standard story. Now, within loop quantum cosmology, we have a pre-inflationary dynamics. So it doesn't make sense anymore to set initial conditions at the onset of inflation because we have pre-inflationary dynamics. So what happens within loop quantum cosmology with the inverse of the comoving Hubble radius, I am plotting it here. Right after the bounce, well, during the bounce, we have like a super inflation, very short epoch. And then very fast, the comoving Hubble radius first is decreasing, and then is increasing again, and then just it reaches the classical dynamics. So what happens during the bounce is that sun scales cross out the horizon right after the bounce, and then later they cross in again before inflation. So those scales reach the onset of inflation in an excited state, excited with respect to the Banch-Davis vacuum. And if those scales are observable, then they might have left an imprint in the CMB. So this is the physics that we want to explore. Okay? Sorry?
Can I ask a question?
Yes, a question. Well, firstly,
where is it just an assumption that the Banch-Davis vacuum is the vacuum state during the bounce?
No. We are not going to set the Banch-Davis vacuum at the bounce.
You don't?
Because the dynamics at the bounce is not close to the de Sitter dynamics.
Good.
That question is open. What are the natural initial conditions at the bounce or for quantum cosmology? And that's the question that we would like to explore.
Great.
All right. I'm going to construct some vacua that we might think that they are good candidates for vacuum. But that's the question that is open and that we are investigating. Which vacua in loop quantum cosmology are good vacua in the sense that they lead to predictions that agree with observations, and also what are the consequences to observe cosmological observables due to that choice of vacua. All right.
Just one more. They're not vacua. The states coming into the bounce are presumably very excited states. They're the result of collapse of something.
Yeah, that's true. So here I'm going to discuss two different ways how to set initial conditions. Way before the bounce, and also at the bounce.
Okay.
And you might question later whether it is reasonable to do that or not, but we can come back to that question later.
Great. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Lee.
Brown?
You kind of partially answered the question. Maybe you're going to answer later. Hello, Merced. It was just about now that you have these excited states, I guess you will have to worry about scale invariance, right? Or the breaking of scale invariance in the initial condition. Is that one of the big worries?
We observe almost scale invariance just for a particular window of scales. So yeah, we would like to recover that.
But that's not too constrainable, so it doesn't constrain too much the, because when you say you're going to get away from the window, right?
Yeah, with these states that I will show you what they are, these low energy states, mm-hmm. they are good candidate in that sense that precisely for a kinetic dominated era before inflation, they lead to this almost scale invariant part of the spectrum. We will see it.
Okay.
And yeah, what happens in loop quantum cosmology is precisely that before inflation, we have a regime of the dynamics that is kinetically dominated in the sense that here, the scalar field that is generating the background, our later inflaton field, here, the potential doesn't play any role, the potential of that field, okay? It's completely kinetically dominated around the bounds. So even if we put as matter content a scalar field with a potential around the bounds, we can treat it as a massless scalar field. Okay, I will continue. Just to review a bit the physics of cosmological perturbations. So as I say, I will consider some inflaton field subject to some potential, and this potential will play a role during inflation, but not during the bounds. And we describe both scalar and tensor perturbations via some gauge invariant fields that I will call Q and T, but I will denote both of them by this standard T, because I will show you computations of both the scalar power spectrum and tensor power spectrum. Okay, so we do Fourier transform, and the Fourier modes of these gauge invariant fields verify this type of equation of motion. H is the Hubble parameter, dot means derivative with respect to proper time, and omega of t is some function of t that is different for a scalar than for tensor modes, okay? That I write it here. Omega here, is some function of proper time. And typically what we do is we rescale these Fourier modes. We multiply them by the scale factor. And these rescale modes that now I call U, with respect to conformal time, they verify the equation of motion of a harmonic oscillator with time-dependent mass. Okay, and there is a relation between this time-dependent mass and the omega of the equation before that is given here. So in GR, this function is very well known, this S of eta, both for tensor modes and for scalar modes. What happens in loop quantum cosmology is that this time function changes with respect to the GR1. In loop quantum cosmology, there are several prescriptions in loop quantum cosmology. The most well-known ones are the ones called Dressmetric approach and hybrid LQC. here I will work within the hybrid LQC paradigm, and we can write those functions, those time-dependent masses for tensor modes and for scalar modes in terms of the scale factor, the energy density, and the pressure in this way. For tensors, that function is simply given by this expression. And for scalar modes, it is the same contribution as for tensors, plus another contribution that only depends on the potential. So essentially, around the bounds, tensor modes and scalar modes verify the very same dynamics, because this term is negligible around the bounds. Anyway, this is just some time-dependent function. The thing is that the equation of motion in general has no analytical solutions. Yeah, Logan?
Can you just recall what you mean by hybrid LQC? Not everybody knows. So it's like you treat classically the background with this modified equation and you quantize the fluctuations, is that?
Yeah. I mean, the difference between these two approaches are very technical. It just, at the end of the day, it has to do with factor ordering and how the way we define our operators. But essentially, both what we do following Dress metric approach or hybrid LQC, essentially what we do is quantize the homogeneous modes of the system following the polymeric quantization of LQC and the perturbations using Fock quantization. And the way how at the end of the day we get to perturbations over a background is where the main differences are between the two approaches. But at the end, it's like, as I say, differences in factor ordering and B, which is in the operators. But for example, the analog time-dependent masses in the Dress metric approach, they are not well defined at the bounds, okay? Within the hybrid approach, these functions are perfectly defined at the bounds point.
And can you recall me, does that take into account back reaction? That is, the homogeneous mode is back reacted by the, no?
No, well.
Or is there, yeah.
No, we are at this level, we are already describing the background via gauge invariance and the perturbations also, but we neglect back reaction of perturbations within this background. In that sense, it's like the standard cosmological model. It's just that our background doesn't verify Einstein equations. Although one could try to even introduce more quantum corrections, okay? The first quantum correction that you introduce is just considering the scale factor following the effective dynamics of LQC. Okay, so how do we get predictions with the physics of cosmological perturbations? What we need is to compute the power spectra of both scalar and tensor perturbations. And for that, we have to assume initial conditions for these perturbations. So we choose an initial time, we choose initial conditions for perturbations at that initial time, and then we evolve our perturbations with the equation of motion that they verify. And we want to evolve their dynamics till the scales that we are interested in have crossed the horizon. Because after crossing the horizon during inflation, their power spectra freezes, okay? And well, typically we compute the power spectra of the commoving curvature, Carly R, and the power spectra of tensor modes, here called PT. All right, so in GR, this is the standard expression within GR. This set here is related to the scale factor of the geometry, the Hubble parameter, and the time derivative of the inflaton field. All right, these expressions are standard. So we are going to compute that power spectra, but within the paradigm of loop quantum cosmology. So now the equation is open that when we choose initial conditions for perturbations and which initial conditions we choose for them. That's an open question. So there are many approaches. So the most natural one, but one of the most well-known approaches is to choose adiabatic vacua. Adiabatic vacua are based on a WKV approximation of the equations of motion. Also, people have investigated using vacua that diagonalize the Hamiltonian. Other approaches minimize some physical quantities, like the renormalized stress energy tensor or some uncertainty relations, or also some smear quantities. This is the approach that we are going to follow here in this talk. We are going to minimize the renormalized energy density smear along the trajectory of an isotropic observer. So that's where the states of low energy come in. These states of low energy were introduced by Olbermann in 2007. And his approach is based on previous result by Fuster. So Fuster in 2000, he showed that the renormalized energy density smear along a time-like curve is bounded from below as a function of the state. And so one can try to find the state that minimizes this renormalized energy density. And Olbermann applied this to the case of cosmology, okay? So it is really easy to define a state of low energy in cosmology. We simply define a procedure to find the state that minimizes this smear energy density mode by mode. But we will see, when I define them, you will see in a minute, that we need to choose a smearing function, okay? So the ambiguity in the choice of vacua in the case of a state of low energy is codified in the choice of a smearing function. This smearing function is supported on the world line of an isotropic observer. So each isotropic observer measures a smear energy density and can define the associated state of low energy. These states of low energy are good candidates for vacua in loop quantum cosmology because we already know before applying them to loop quantum cosmology that when we have a kinetic epoch before inflation, they lead to that almost invariant part of the power spectrum that we observe in the sky. And they have very good properties. I will review them later, but I would like to tell you already that they have been proven to be exact Hadamard states.
Okay, so
I have a technical question about that. So these states of minimal energy, presumably they depend on what class of time-like curves you're choosing, right?
Exactly, that's where the ambiguity resides.
So you have to choose the observer, and then so there's more than one, I guess.
There are infinite, of course, but I will also discuss what we have seen is that at the end of the day, physical results do not depend. It might sound surprising, but at the end, physical results for the way we have constructed these states, at the end of the day, physical results, I mean the power spectra, is not so sensitive to the shape and support of this smearing function. We will see it during the talk. Okay, so let me review the construction of these states of low energy as Olbermann defined it in 2007. So remember our equation of motion. This is the equation of motion that our modes solve. So we want to find the solution for the Fourier modes TK that minimize the smear energy density. So the contribution to the smear energy density of each mode is this quantity that I call here E of T, okay? And you see it's a smearing that depends on a smearing function F of T. This smearing function is supported on the world line of an isotropic observer, and as Logan says, every smearing function leads to a state of low energy. And that's where we have moved the ambiguity in the choice of vacua, all right, of quantum field theory. Okay, let's see how to find it. Given a smearing function, let's see how to find the associated state of low energy. what we do first is we just choose an arbitrary solution of this equation of motion. It doesn't matter. It will be a fiducial solution in the sense that at the end of the day, the state of flow energy does not depend at all on this arbitrary solution. So we choose an arbitrary solution. Typically, we will solve numerically this equation, but we can find a solution numerically. So we choose some arbitrary initial conditions and we just evolve them. And given an arbitrary solution, the solution that we want to find, T, will be related to this arbitrary solution S via a Bogoliubov transformation. So I am calling the Bogoliubov coefficients lambda and mu. The states of low energy are, of course, defined up to an arbitrary phase. So without loss of generality, we can choose mu to be positive and real. And then I am going to define these quantities, C1 and C2, that know about the Smerling function that we are choosing and the arbitrary solution. So C1 is like the energy density associated to the mode SK, and C2 has a similar expression, but C2 can be complex. While C1 is positive, C2 is in general complex. Okay, and then the Bogoliubov Bogoliubov transformation leads to, remember, we have here the contribution of the mode TK to the Smear energy density. So in terms of those Bogoliubov coefficients, lambda mu, and these quantities that depend on the arbitrary solution that we are choosing, we can write the Smear energy density, the contribution to this mode, to the Smear energy density, in this way. You see, it depends on C1, C2, and the Bogoliubov coefficients, mu and lambda. And this is the expression that we want to minimize. So the first conclusion that we get while minimizing it is that we have to have this relation between the phase of the Bogoliubov coefficient lambda and the phase of that quantity C2 that in general is complex. The arguments have to verify this expression. And once we substitute this on the expression above, we get this second expression for E of T only as a function of mu, C1 and C2. And now we can minimize it with respect to the volume of coefficient mu. And that leads to this expression for mu and lambda. So remember, we chose an arbitrary solution S of the equation of motion. With that S and the Smerling function F, we construct C1 and C2. And then our solution T that minimizes the Smear energy density is related with the arbitrary solution S via a Bogoliubov transformation with Bogoliubov coefficients mu and lambda that are completely fixed. All right? And so this is the summary. T given S, T is this expression. And as I said, even though I had to choose some arbitrary solution S, at the end of the day, this combination does not depend on S at all. It doesn't matter which S you choose, you get a unique result that depends only on the Smerling function F. Remember that C1 and C2 were Smear quantities. There are integrals in the variable T that have F inside. All right. So once we define them, we might think, okay, can we define a unique one? Can we get a unique state of low energy? The answer is that is only possible in ultrastatic spacetimes. Only in ultrastatic spacetimes, the state of low energy does not depend on the Smerling function. But if the spacetime is non-stationary, then for each Smerling function, we will have a state of low energy. So they are not unique in general. Properties of these states. Olbermann already proved that they are Hadamard. And very recently, in 2020, Banerjee and Niedermayer also explored further properties of these Hadamard states. In maximally symmetric spacetimes, we recover the natural vacuum, okay? In the sense that in Minkowski, it is trivial to show that states of low energy are just Minkowski vacuum, okay? We can also wonder what happens in the sitter, whether this procedure of minimizing the smear energy density also singles out Vance Davis. Okay, it has been proven that that is the case if the support of the smearing function starts in past infinity. Okay, they also prove explicitly that the states of low energies can be expressed explicitly with an equation that does not depend on S. But in practical terms, the procedure I gave you is the most practical one, okay? But one can prove that indeed they do not depend on S, on this arbitrary function that we chose to construct them. Also, they show very nice properties in the ultraviolet and in the infrared. They admit asymptotic expansions, all right? In the ultraviolet, one would like the behavior of these modes to be independent on the smearing function, because in the ultraviolet they should behave like Minkowski vacuum, and indeed they do. In the ultraviolet, their expansion is independent on the smearing function. And in the infrared, it only depends on the smearing function up to a constant. I mean that the infrared expansion of all the states of low energy is the same up to a constant. Okay, and finally, they are good candidates as vacua for cosmological perturbations because they show agreement with observation for cosmological models where this happens, where we have inflation and before inflation, a kinetically dominated regime. All right, so this was analyzed by Niedermayer and Banerjee, and for their background, they assume just a kinetic domination and later the sitter branch, okay? Loop quantum cosmology is a bit different, but also shares similarities because, as I told you, the bounds of loop quantum cosmology is also a region where the inflaton field is completely kinetically dominated. So we thought, okay, if these states are good for kinetic domination before inflation, they're gonna be good candidates as vacua within loop quantum cosmology. That's why we were motivated to study them in loop quantum cosmology. Okay, so how we construct them? First, what I'm gonna show you today is just a preliminary analysis in the sense that for the background, I am just choosing some fixed initial conditions, okay, as a toy model. So I'm gonna choose a quadratic potential for the inflaton field and some fixed values for the mass and for the value of the field at the bounds, which is this 5b. Right now, we are doing a proper Bayesian analysis, also leaving free the parameters of the background, but I don't have results yet. So what I'm gonna show you today is for this, let's say, toy model that I am fixing the background, just to have a first examination of the power spectra that we get from these states of low energy. So the mass of the inflaton field and its amplitude at the bounds, these fixed values, they are motivated to have, they are fine-tuned to have agreement with observations. And for the initial conditions, for that arbitrary solution S, we just choose the simplest one, which are initial conditions, the initial conditions of a zero-order adiabatic state. Okay, anyway, in simpler words, at the initial time where I set initial conditions, I choose for my Fourier modes this very simple expression, and later I evolve them using the equation of motion. Okay, so why this value of the field at the bounds? When I say that we would like to have agreement with observations, what I want is what Logan already said, essentially that observations, well, the data display a band of scales where the power spectrum is almost a scale invariant. So here I am plotting. So this is the posterior plot of Planck collaboration, okay? For the primordial power spectrum for scalar perturbations. So we see here in this band of scales and this almost scale invariant part of the power spectrum. And then in order to have agreement with observations, our model should reproduce this almost straight line. And here we can allow oscillations because here you see the band is not narrow. So what happens with the value of the fill at the bounds? If we vary the value of the fill at the bounds, we might not get agreement with observations. For example, if we choose it too high, the power spectrum will oscillate a lot in this band where we know it does not oscillate. Here we already need to see this scale invariant behavior. So if we push it too much, to too low values, we will get agreement with observations. But then what might happen also is that we don't get any imprint in the CMB that codifies corrections from quantum cosmology, okay? Because the scales that might be affected by quantum corrections, they might not be observable. So here there is also a play, okay? We are fine tuning the value of the field so that we get agreement with observations, but so that also there is a range of scales that we observe and that they feel the curvature of the background at the bounds. Later, with a proper Bayesian analysis, we will explore whether this whether observations prefer or not that value of the field, okay? As I say, as a toy model, we are choosing this value so that the power spectrum that we obtain has, well, it oscillates, but for a band of scales where we don't observe yet the scale invariant behavior. Is this clear? Okay, I guess if no one complains, I can go on. Okay, so first, as I say, we choose initial conditions for our background and initial conditions for the arbitrary solution S. In order to compute the state of low energy, the next step is choosing the Smerin function. And here is where the ambiguity comes in. The ambiguity, I mean, affecting the choice of vacuum. So usually, when choosing initial conditions for perturbations in loop quantum cosmology, there are two strategies. Some people choose initial conditions at the bounds, and some people choose initial conditions well before the bounds. Okay, we are going to explore both possibilities. We don't really need to choose initial conditions. What we need to choose is the Smerin function, that window function. Okay, so I will show you these two strategies. When I support my Smerin function well before the bounds and after before the bounds, I will call that whole evolution. And we will also explore setting the support, the initial point of the support of the Smerin function at the bounds. And I will call that expanding branch. We have explored several shapes for the Smerin function and also several windows starting, no, like the support of the Smerin function. And what we have seen is that the results, the power spectrum at the end of inflation, is not very sensitive neither to the support, neither to the shape, nor to the shape of the Smerin function, as long as it is wide enough. All right. So let's see how we choose this Smerin function. As I say, we explore many shapes. And since we didn't see many differences, at the end, the shape that we choose is the simplest one. We have chosen a Smerin function of this type. It's just a step function, but that it is smooth, okay? that is defined via a hyperbolic tangent. So our Smerling function will be this step function, and we are gonna play with the initial point of the support. Either we place the bounce here at the middle so that our Smerling function explores both before, way before the bounce and right well after the bounce, or we are gonna place it right at the bounce, this starting point, all right? That's what we will call whole evolution or expanding branch. And given the Smerling function, we can compute all the quantities C1, C2, and the volume of coefficients, and define the Fourier modes of our state of flow energy. Of course, all these computations are numerical, because the equation of motion cannot be solved analytically. Okay, and once we have the state of flow energy associated to our Smerling function, we compute the power spectra of both scalar perturbations and tensor perturbations at the end of inflation, where these power spectra are frozen. And this is what we get. So in red, I am plotting the power spectra when we explore the whole evolution scenario, when we set the support of the Smerling function covering the contracting branch of the universe and the expanding branch. And in green, I am showing the results when we place the initial point of the Smerling function right at the bounce. In order not to neglect the bounce, in that case, we choose a quite a steep function, all right? Because also we play with this with the steepness of this ramping up branch. So when we want to explore the consequences of having a bounce. So when we explore this expanding branch scenario, we don't want to diminish the bounce, so we set it quite steep. And as you see, the power spectra is pretty insensitive to the strategy that we follow. And also, I am not showing you, but I tell you, we also choose different Smerling functions. For example, a bunch of Gaussians one after the other. We play with bumps, and at the end, the power spectra didn't feel it much. So we were surprised, because one would think that since we have an infinite choice of Smerling functions, results would depend a lot. But thinking of the most reasonable ones, we didn't get much difference. So in a sense, we are not so worried about that ambiguity anymore. As long as I told you, we have to choose the support of this main function wide enough to observe that the results do not depend much on the shape of this main function. Okay. This is just some zoom in of the region of oscillations. You see that the power spectra oscillate a lot, but later we get this nearly scale invariant behavior. And a bit surprisingly as well, this power spectra likes a lot like the power spectra resulting from a two-order adiabatic vacuum state. So here I am plotting in blue the power spectra that comes from choosing, for initial conditions, not a state of low energy, but an adiabatic vacuum. So we see that the states of low energy resemble a lot the physics that comes from choosing that sort of adiabatic vacuum. So observationally, they lead to similar results. But fundamentally, a second order adiabatic vacuum and a state of low energy are very different. Okay, states of low energy, remember, for example, they have been proven to be exact Hadamard states. Adiabatic vacua are not Hadamard states in general. Well, in general, strictly speaking, you have to go to infinite order adiabatic vacuum to have a Hadamard state. But at the end of the day, numerically, choosing second order adiabatic vacua or states of low energy lead essentially to the same results. To be honest, I don't know why. If I choose, for example, four order adiabatic vacua, I get different results. Okay, and this preliminary study, we are confident that they are good candidates because at least for that choice of background, we get agreement with observations in the following sense. We get a spectral index. So this is our prediction for the spectral index choosing this state of low energy. And it is perfectly compatible with the value reported by Planck. And for the tensor to scalar ratio, we don't get a nice number, but only because we are choosing this phi squared potential. So this tensor to scalar ratio in this plot corresponds to this red point here. So it's not very good, but this is not due to the choice of a state of low energy as vacuum, but as I said, it comes from the fact that I am studying here a phi squared potential for the inflaton, that it is ruled out by observations. But even being ruled out with Luke quantum cosmology, this potential works better than with standard cosmology, because standard cosmology, the phi square potential corresponds to this band that is outside this contours, so it is ruled out. But within Luke quantum cosmology, that's much better work. But anyway, now we are carrying a Bayesian analysis, a proper Bayesian analysis, leaving free all the parameters, and we are gonna choose other better inflaton potentials like the Starobinsky one. But as a preliminary study for this state of low energy, we were very happy. And also, something that we did is something that, yeah, what we are doing here, I will explain now, is also that what happens if we move the Smerin function away from the bounds. Because since we have that freedom of choosing where the Smerin function, the support of the Smerin function, if we move it away the bounds, we can disentangle effects that come from the bounds from effects that come from that choice of initial conditions for perturbations. No? So we want to disentangle effects of Luke quantum cosmology from the effects that are associated to kinetic dominance. So we choose our step function, and within this expanding branches scenario, we move the starting point of the support towards the right, away from the bounds. And what we see is the following. So here I am showing you different power spectra corresponding to different starting points for the support. So eta equal to zero means starting at the bounds, right at the bounds. We set quite a steep window function so that we don't diminish the bounds too much in the ramping up of the step. And you see these are starting points for the support that are away from the bounds more and more. This is in Planck units, in Planck times. And what we see is that as we go more to the kinetic dominated regime without the bounds, the spectra loses all the oscillations, and we get this very smooth power spectrum. For example, like this one in blue, this does not see the bounds at all. And this, we were interested in this result because there has been another proposal for initial conditions within Luke quantum cosmology that is usually known as the non-oscillatory vacuum. This non-oscillatory vacuum is constructed in loop quantum cosmology precisely to minimize these oscillations in the power spectrum. And what we are seeing here is that with states of low energy, we can also resemble that behavior of the power spectrum. These states were constructed numerically. The method to construct it is minimizing oscillations, and you need lots of power computation to compute this vacuum. While states of low energy are very easy to construct, you just follow the recipe I gave you. So we are also analyzing, doing the Bayesian analysis right now. We are both analyzing all these regimes. What happens when one has this sort of a spectra at the end of inflation, or how is the agreement with observations if the spectra oscillates a lot? Also, via this comparison, we could prove that this non-oscillatory vacuum is also Hadamard. The proponents of this vacuum were pretty confident that it is Hadamard, but they couldn't have a rigorous proof that they are Hadamard. And via the comparison with states of low energy, we could prove it because, well, essentially what we use is the asymptotic expansions that we have. There is an asymptotic expansion for this non-oscillatory vacuum in loop quantum cosmology, and we could compare it with the asymptotic expansions of states of low energy to prove that, yeah, in the ultraviolet, they are the same.
Merci, sorry, I think that there was a question by Lee.
Ah, sorry.
You ask a question.
I'm a little confused as to what is your overwhelming principle. You can choose to change the initial conditions and trade those for the dynamics, but it makes me nervous that you have free choice. It seems like you can explain anything more than one way. And that in a certain sense means you know, this is a problem. It's not remotely just with your approach. It's a generic problem with different kinds of cosmological theories. Is that there's a freedom to change initial conditions and change those for a statement of what the laws are.
And I understand you completely. So it's not that we have freedom, but my point of view is that these parameters, for example, the parameters defining the background.
Yes.
Yeah, they are parameters of the quantum theory, but from my point of view, sometimes they are chosen using some ad hoc arguments. So I also would like to explore, how to say, we would like to do this Bayesian analysis also for the parameters of the background. First, to see if the background that people in loop quantum cosmology set, because there are arguments that set a value for the energy density, a value for the scalar field at the bounds, and so on and so forth. So we would like just to do this Bayesian analysis to see if the best fit with observations comes from a model that where the parameters are of the order of magnitude that the models in loop quantum cosmology say, okay? But we could fix them also and see what the Bayesian analysis says. It's just that from my point of view, the arguments that people use to fix them, I am not convinced also. For example, as an example, the energy density, the maximum of the energy density within loop quantum cosmology. There are arguments to set it using some arguments from loop quantum gravity, but they are a bit ad hoc. So I don't know, we are exploring everything, but it's true that we don't have definite arguments to set the value of the field at the bounds or initial conditions for perturbations. with this strategy of using a state of low energy, at least what we have seen is that apparently the freedom that we have in choosing the state for the cosmological perturbations, that ambiguity seems to disappear. Apart from we all, the freedom at the end is to place your smearing function. But as we saw, the results do not even depend much on that. Here I am exploring two different regions of the evolution. The one in red explores the whole, let's say, dynamics pre-bounce, during the bounce, after the bounce, inflation, and so on. While the green only sees from the bounce onwards. And the spectra that we get are pretty much the same. So it seems to us that choosing a state of low energy, at least the ambiguity in the choice of the vacuum state for perturbations disappears. Of course, okay. Like I am saying that within the state of low energy paradigm, let's say.
Yes, no, I see that, and that's a kind of progress. But so I thought the whole point of a balance is that the quantum state is evolving from deep in the past, far before the bounce. And it's not chosen by some argument about.
So, no, with the result in red, it's for exploring the whole evolution from the classical branch that was contracting through the bounce towards the future. But I think there are not yet arguments that convince me completely how to choose the parameters of the quantum theory.
No, yes. There are arguments that you'll always be in this situation. And that's the argument that I worry about. That is, there's no form of quantum theory that will get you out of this trap, this situation.
Sorry, I couldn't understand you.
There are arguments that no form of quantum cosmology gets you out of the inability to distinguish changing the initial conditions from changing the potential of the inflaton.
Yeah.
And therefore, there's not possible an explanation that distinguishes changing the initial conditions from changing the equations of motion. And that basically means that your explanatory paradigm in any form of mechanics has broken down. And it's not your theory alone, it's everybody's theory.
Yeah, I completely understand you, yes.
Well, then we should be trying to do something else.
Yeah.
And I'm not criticizing you, your work or your colleagues' work individually. It says you do it so well that you bring out the fatal weakness. That's I apologize, but that's my point of view.
No. I completely understand your comment. Yes, we all have this problem in cosmology. Yeah, I understand. But at least we would like to explore. We would like to compare our loop quantum cosmology paradigm with the standard cosmological paradigm. I think it's interesting because it's simply that, the dynamics around the bounce might leave some imprint in the CMB that we could observe. So, what we are investigating now, for example, is we would like to see if within LQC we can solve some tensions that the standard model has. But I agree with you. What you are posing is a bigger question, yeah.
No, but I think it's a solve. I'd love to talk about that sometime because it's something that the arguments I mentioned, the details were published 7 or 8 years ago. So anyway, go ahead.
Yeah. Okay. I was just about to finish with a summary. Simply, I would like to say that the states of low energy seem to be good candidates for vacua. They have very nice properties. They are Hadamard states. They minimize the smear energy density, and they have will define infrared and ultraviolet behaviors. And they lead to good agreement with observations when a kinetic dominated period precedes inflation. And that's what essentially we have in LQC. So we wanted to explore them within LQC. Yeah, this is just a preliminary study in that sense that we are carrying out now a proper Bayesian analysis to see whether we improve theoretical predictions in comparison to observations, because the standard cosmological model has tensions. For example, this was already discussed by Avai and Bryce's group. They also have a proposal for a vacuum state. They also have a proposal for initial conditions for the background. And they show that this lensing amplitude tension that the standard cosmological model has, they show that within LQC seems to be a bit alleviated. So we wanted to explore whether that is universal of LQC or is just a result or of their choice of vacuum and their choice of background. Because, yeah, as we were just discussing, we might have freedom in those choices, but maybe the resulting physics is insensitive to those choices. That's also something we would like to explore, right? Whether some predictions are due to LQC or are only due to our choice of initial vacuum for perturbations, because they are two different things. So anyway, I hope I see you soon at LOOPS maybe, and I can tell you more about our Bayesian analysis. Right now, we don't have conclusive results yet. And I finish here. Thank you all for your attention. It is getting very dark here. Let me go to switch on my light.
Yes, and then
okay, I'm back.
Okay, are there questions or answers from students? So no questions from students, so questions from anyone else?
I do have a question, Merced, about, so what I find interesting in your state is that there's some kind of infrared cutoff that you have to put, right? You're in your function f of t there. But you seem to say that there's no special infrared phenomena. I would expect some dependence on this infrared cutoff, or I would focus on that. It would be something kind of interesting. So you don't see any role for this infrared cutoff.
So this is a function of time.
Yes.
Yes. So yeah, you are right, but it's true that at the end, there is just a small dependence. It only depends up to a constant.
Okay. So maybe it plays a role only if you take into account back reaction, because here it's interesting. You choose a state, you both have a UV and an infrared cutoff in that choice of FT, but I would expect some phenomenology to come from that, but maybe it's...
Yeah, you're right. But in that, yeah, they are pretty universal also in the infrared.
Okay, so maybe, okay. Yeah, that was surprising to me. Yeah, the universality in the UV is because you neglect
the UV,
that
of course. No, we would like to get Minkowski like states.
Yeah, but that's because you neglect back reaction, right? If you include back reaction, it's no longer true. But in the UV, in the infrared, it's
I agree with you. No, that they should feel curvature and everything.
Yes,
the infrared modes, but in a way, because we are smearing this full quantity. We want to minimize an average. I guess it's because of the whole average. No, we are not focusing on a instantaneous quantity. We are focusing on a time average. Maybe that's why. That at the end, the infrared has to behave also properly for this average to be minimal. I cannot hear you.
I would say if you were not putting the infrared cutoff, all the infrared divergences will dominate the dynamics. So anyway, so you don't have
I haven't thought more deeply about it. But it's interesting. Maybe Niedermayer discusses that in his paper. I don't remember.
Okay.
I read it time ago, but I can't check. Because they explore this infrared expansion. They might discuss it further. But I don't remember.
Other questions? Maybe I have a naive question. So if you could have a big computational power and you could really start from LQG formulation, so instead of the mini superspace model, would you have any way to constrain the vacuum, the parameters or the type of vacuum you can start with, like from first principle computations?
So in canonical LQG, there is a uniqueness result, but no, the Astekar-Lewandowski vacuum, but that's for the kinematical state. So in LQG, for sure we have to do lots of simplifications and approximations to find the physical states. I have no idea if one could, supposing we can solve the theory and find the physical Hilbert space, I don't know if there would be arguments to find a unique vacuum. I guess Lee and Lohan might have better grasp on this.
There is the Cardano state, which we'll be hearing more about later soon.
Okay. Yeah, also thinking on cosmology, of course, people are trying to also to define within LQG something codifying the a cosmological sector. But I don't think they have solved the theory either, even though there are approximations there.
Thank you. Okay, so other questions, Zoom or here? Okay, so if not, let's thank again Mercy for the very nice talk and for the interesting discussion.